Labor Commerce will now come to order. It is 3:20 p.m. on Wednesday, April 2nd. With us, we have Representative Herron, Representative Reinbold, Representative Josephson, Representative Sadler, and myself, Chair Olson. We do have two members that are either on the way or stuck in another committee, but will be showing up shortly, but we do have a quorum. Please turn off your cell phones. And first item on the calendar today is House Bill 309, Craft Distillery License. Carrying the bill is Representative Tuck and...
And staff, George Ascoff.
Welcome both of you. I think it's the first time you've been before the committee this year.
I think it's actually the first time I've been in the committee ever.
Oh, then we can string it out all...
We're going to get 2 hours worth?
I'm sure, yes.
2 hours.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Chris Tuck. I'm representative in South Central Anchorage, House District 22. And I'm accompanied by my staff, George Ascott. I would like to thank the committee for hearing blank committee substitute for House Bill 309.
I think before we get too far, we will I'll entertain a motion to adopt the CS.
Mr. Chairman, I move committee substitute 309 version Y as the working document.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion, and the CS is the working document, so.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please continue.
And this is an act relating to distillery licenses. House Bill 309, which has no fiscal impact on the state, modernizes the distillery laws in Alaska so they closely mirror those for wineries and breweries by giving distillers the ability to attract customers by hosting tours of their facilities and being able to give out samples and being able to sell their product right there in their facilities. The changes will enable local distilleries to attract tourism and take part in the tourism industry to be able to contribute more to the economy and to create jobs by allowing for the sales of up to 1 gallon of the product directly to the public for consumption off-premises, allowing for the sales of not more than 3 ounces for consumption on-premises, and allowing for a person to sample small portions of the product free of charge while on the premises. Similar to wineries and breweries, House Bill 309 prevents distilleries from acting as a de facto bar by prohibiting bar-like amenities such as limiting hours of operation. To date, this legislation has received the support of all 5 of Alaska's small distilleries, the Brewers Guild of Alaska, the Haines Chamber of Commerce, Explorer Fairbanks, the Kenai Peninsula Tourism Marketing Council, the Alaska Farm Bureau, and CHAR. And so with that, and as today we have no opposition to the bill, but I would like to walk you guys through the sectional analysis if you'd like.
Certainly.
Okay, so first we have section 1 starting on page 1, line 3 of the draft. The changes affect AS04.11.170 titled Distillery License. It currently allows for only the operation of the distillery and for the sales to licensees. That's currently how the law is written. From lines 4 to 7, they allow the holder of a distillery license to sell alcoholic beverages directly to the public for consumption off the premises. Previously, a distiller could only sell to a holder of one of the several state licenses, ranging from a package store to beverage dispensary. So they were limited to those two conditions of sales.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Millett.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Sorry I'm late. Judiciary.
Yeah, you were close.
And then going on, the amount allowed here is not more than 1 gallon, so that they're limited to only be able to sell 1 gallon per person, as opposed to 5 gallons for wineries and breweries. On lines 8 and 9,
to do this to you, but we've also been joined by Speaker Chenault. We do have a full committee.
On lines 8 and 9, a prohibition on selling less than 5 gallons to a licensee is removed at the request of the industry because there's no clear reason for the prohibition. So before, when they sell to a distributor, they couldn't sell less than 5 gallons. Why? Who knows? This allows them to do that. Starting on page 1, line 10, is a new subsection, and that's added allowing for free samples in small portions with exceptions for drunken persons. It's the same language for wineries and distilleries, and for breweries, I'm sorry. And then section E, sales of up to 3 ounces for consumption on the premises. This is the same language for breweries, except breweries allowed for 36 ounces. three 12-ounce portions. And there's subsection E also has an additional three provisions prohibiting live entertainment, televisions, pool tables, dart games, dancing, electronic or other games, game tables, or other recreational gaming opportunities, or seats at a counter or bar, and limiting the hours of operations between 9 a.m. and 8 p.m. And this is intended to prevent the distilleries from acting as de facto bars and, you know, having patrons come in a bar-like situation. That's pretty much the simple bill. We have two proposed amendments, friendly amendments, if you want to go into it now or if you want.
No, we're going to see if anybody has any questions on the bill, and then we'll get into the two amendments. Representative Josephson?
Not yet.
Not yet.
I may.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Tuck. I have no idea how many distilleries there are in Alaska or how much demand there is for locally distilled product. I'm not even quite sure what the breweries for the beer production is, but give me some idea of what the current capacity is and what the possible demand might be for expansion.
Yeah, we have currently five distilleries throughout the state of Alaska, from the Kenai Peninsula up to Fairbanks. We have one out in the valley, Matsu, and we have one in Anchorage. And where's the fifth one? Do we recall the fifth one?
There's
Sterling?
Distilleries, yeah.
No, there's one in Sterling as well.
Oh, I'm sorry. May I?
Yes.
This is George Ascott, staff to Rep. Tuck through the chair. Thank you, Representative Sadler. The five distilleries in Anchorage in Alaska are the Alaska Distillery, which is in Wasilla. Bear Distillery, which is in Anchorage, the Highmark Distillery, which is in Sterling, and Port Chilcoot Distillery, which is in Haines, and Ursa Major Distilling, which is in Fairbanks.
Representative Reinbold.
Thank you, Chair Olson. Representative Tuck, your staff recently showed me a fiscal note, and I'm wondering if it's going to have any impact on the bill.
Well, I don't know if you remember what the date of the month was, and the month was yesterday, but that fiscal note ended up being a false fiscal note, and this fiscal note right here is zero. It has no impact on the state of Alaska.
How much was the other one? Just out of curiosity, I'll bite.
$10 million, $10 million, $10 million over indefinite, and it was an exorbitant amount of forecasted cost to the Treasury.
Representative Chenault.
Nope.
With that, we do have two amendments in the packet, and I would entertain a motion to move amendment number one.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment Y.1.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Who wants it?
Okay, Mr. Chair, thank you very much. This amendment number one adds a new section to HB 309, it amends section A of AS 0421.065, titling posting of warning signs. So basically, it adds distilleries which provide samples to a list of licensees who must post such signs, and the signs basically says drinking and smoking during pregnancy can lead to birth defects. A person providing alcohol to someone under 21 can receive up to 5 years in prison and a fine of $50,000. And a person under 21 entering the premises in violation of law could be liable for a fine up to $1,000. So it's the same as you would have in any type of establishment that serves alcohol.
Any discussion on amendment number one? Seeing none, I will lift my objection to amendment number one. And is there any further objections? Seeing none, amendment number one is adopted. Amendment number two, do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment Y.2.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Okay, and amendment number two also adds a section to House Bill 309 amending section A of AS 04.21.025 titled Alcohol Server Education Course. By adding distillers and their agents and their employees who sell or serve alcohol to the list of licensees which must complete a board certified alcohol education course, we know it as TAM. I guess the new card is also called TAP card. So just anyone who's serving alcohol has the same responsibilities and requirements to get certified as any other establishment.
Any questions on amendment number 2? I'll remove my objection. Are there any further objections? Seeing none, amendment 2 is passed. Guess we got a few people who would like to testify on this. Any questions for the sponsor before we open it up to the public? Public testimony is now open. Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we will leave the building and go off net to Heather Shade from Haynes. Are you with us, Heather?
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're coming in great. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Okay, my name is Heather Shade. I am the co-owner of the Port Chilkoot Distillery in Haynes. Port Chilkoot Distillery in Haynes is my company. We produce handcrafted small batch whiskey, gin, vodka. We make it right here in Southeast Alaska. I'd really like to invite each one of you to come up to Haynes and visit our beautiful distillery. We have a restored historical building, and you would be able to see what we do, our production techniques, experience the smell of our whiskey, have a bit of taste, and purchase our products from us. But we can't do that at this point. The existing laws restrict us from doing that, and so that's why we're all here today. To give you a little bit of context, as George Ascott mentioned, there are 5 distilleries in Alaska, each of us representing a very unique region of the state that we operate within. And we can compare this to over 450 small distilleries we have now nationwide. So almost every other state has recently updated their distillery laws to account for this new industry. They've essentially allow on-site tastings and sales, and they've seen great economic success because of these. I believe Idaho was the latest to pass their distillery bill just a couple weeks ago, actually, and it looked very similar to the bill that we're asking you to support today. Our distilleries are already contributing to our state economy and supporting other industries within Alaska right now. For example, we buy Alaskan-grown agricultural products that we use to make our craft spirits. We create export products for the state of Alaska, and we provide jobs. For example, if this law is updated, our distillery personally could hire 2 more people right away to accommodate this new ability to invite visitors to our distilleries, essentially. But we have a lot more potential from what we're doing right now. The problem is it's already really difficult for us to compete with imported mass-produced products, distilled spirits products that you might be familiar with. They're already sitting on the shelves in stores. And so really what we're asking for here with this bill is a more level playing field. For example, following the example of what the microbreweries have already done in the state to make them so successful. Essentially, with our distilleries, to be competitive, we need to be able to promote our products on site. You know, as a small business, it's really that personal connection with our customer that sets us apart from imported mass-produced products, you know. And as you all know, there's a lot of challenges that manufacturing businesses in general have to overcome when we're operating Alaska. You know, we have a very seasonal market, we have a high cost of exportation, and we have difficult shipping logistics. So essentially, we would be in a much better position to absorb those costs and burdens if we could also operate our distilleries as visitor destinations. Our community of Haynes up here has been a huge supporter of our new business. Everyone here is really excited to show us off to the visitors. We're looking at going into our first tourism season here, and in fact, we're located right next to the cruise ship dock. So we'd really like to be able to invite all these visitors that are coming here into our business for the summer. Essentially, This distillery bill, this has been the result of all teamwork among our distilleries. We have the support of all of the breweries, the tourism industry, the Farm Bureau, our chambers of commerce, and our local communities are really hoping to see our new businesses thrive. They're depending on us, too. So I'd just like to say that similar bills that have been passed in other states recently have proved to be a huge success, and this one is good for Alaskan businesses, too. So we thank you and hope for your support.
Well, thank you again for calling in and testifying. Felicia Keith, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome. My name is Felicia Keith Jones, and I am the owner of Highmark Distillery in Sterling, Alaska. We're located next to Kenai and Solana. And I also am a handcrafted micro distillery and interested in visiting with you about House Bill 309. And in a nutshell, House Bill 309 to my distillery means that tastings, tours, and bottle sales from our own distillery would be made possible. And this is something that needs to take place in our state to modernize the industry guidelines that are currently being enjoyed by breweries and wineries across Alaska. So we have a little bit of an antiquated system that the distilleries are working under, only because distilleries were not available in Alaska before, so it was never something that needed to be addressed. Now we have five currently, and it's time for us to catch up to speed with the rest of the industry. The current guidelines that we are working under for Alaska distilleries are rather restrictive and confusing. And I mention that because the federal government requires us to train and establish distilleries across the United States. I personally trained in Spokane, Washington at Dry Fly Distillery and then at Jack Daniel's Distillery. We use these distilleries as models for running our own businesses once we return to Alaska, but then are told that the Alaskan guidelines do not follow the federal guidelines of the rest of the distilleries that we've trained under. So a little bit of confusion there. I'm passionate about House Bill 309 because we need to have the ability to say yes to sales. We're experiencing lost revenue in the state of Alaska through our distilleries because we have become regional anchors for tourism. And lost revenue to the Kenai Peninsula means that I've been contacted by conventions such as the Alaska General Contractors and political conventions that want to use our Alaskan spirits when they're entertaining, but they haven't tasted them yet. And we can't give them tastings, so we are in a little conundrum here of how to let people buy Alaskan and supply them with the beverages they'd like. We also have fishing derbies, and dip netting is something that is a big business down here in the Kenai Peninsula. It's been thousands of visitors to our town. They're wanting tasting parties with their chartered clients, and let's see. Hotels have said that they are so glad that our distillery is here in town because we're giving people a reason to stay an extra day on the Kenai Peninsula because they would like to visit the breweries and distilleries and wineries. And in the Kenai Peninsula, we currently have five breweries, my distillery, and then one winery. So it's being touted as kind of the Napa Valley of beverages, which is entertaining. And it also keeps people in our community purchasing longer as tourists, rather than them just hurrying off to the next location, usually Anchorage, or completely leaving our state. Myself, personally, I turned three carloads of people down yesterday at our distillery. I was amazed that April 1st, we already are seeing tourists trickling in. The word is out that there is a distillery here, but I'm not able to let them even see our facility because we're not to be giving tourist tastings or selling any bottles unless it's a private party through the Chamber of Commerce or something. So we are becoming very limited. When we're talking about lost revenue, numbers are what speak loudest to me. So for lost revenue through the tasting rooms across the United States, tasting rooms on average are commanding between $45,000 and $150,000 a year in their tasting rooms alone in purchases. As a distillery in Alaska, I am generating three taxes off of each bottle sold. So that means that if I had the ability to have a tasting room open, Alaska can capture 40% of this revenue, because that's what I pay in taxes. So it would behoove the state of Alaska to allow us to say yes to tourists and make sales, because we are not going out looking for the tourists. They're coming to our door, and then when we have to tell them, no, thank you, can't provide for you, then that's a heartbreaker for our young companies, and it's also disappointing for the tourists. When visiting about committees, what does this mean to each of you? The community and regional affairs, we are bringing an anchor to the regional tourism industry by providing an interesting place for people to go. For education, we are a shining example of applied chemistry at its finest. Finance, we can capture that lost revenue by generating income off of our tasting rooms, and then, of course, paying taxes to our local communities as well as state and then federal. Labor and commerce, I employ a staff of 4 people. I could then employ a staff of between 6 and 7 people if I had the ability to have a tasting room. We are using all Alaskan or American-made goods, and just to put a number to it, for American fast freight alone, last year, shipping my products in and out, I paid $28,000 to one Alaskan company by using their services. So we are a viable industry, and we are growing. If we have the ability to continue to grow without so many restraints, then we would love to be able to give back to Alaska even more. Our resources are all renewable. Distilleries currently in Alaska are using berries, grains, Alaskan water, Alaskan peat, and donating our mash from our spent mash to chicken farmers. So we are able to be completely renewable and recyclable. Armed services, I am employing a veteran, as I'm sure many other distilleries are. In fact, my distiller, Ray Keith, is a veteran from the Coast Guard. Exports, distilled spirits are one of the main Alaskan products that can be easily exported at a profit to the lower 48 and internationally. It's extremely important to mention that our products are requested internationally. They may not care for our politics, but they sure do like our spirits. So that is also a resource that needs to be expanded upon. Our key successes, we all prided our distilleries in handcrafting the products that we do. I currently handcraft vodka, moonshine, and applejack. Our Kenai Peninsula and Alaska has shown overwhelming support towards our distilleries. Just to mention a couple, we've been chosen 2 years in a row for People's Choice Award at the Taste of the Kenai event, chosen as Wells Fargo's Successful Business Entrepreneur of the Year for 2013. That was for myself. And then Highmark Distillery and Heather Shade, who you just visited with, from Port Chilkoot Distillery. Both of our distilleries were chosen by the Small Business Development Center as success stories for 2014. That was an elite group of about 15 companies throughout the state of Alaska that were chosen. For 2 distilleries to make that top list was should be of interest. And then we are a motivated industry of movers and shakers in Alaska. We've proven ourselves to bring in income and create jobs. For our contributions, nonprofit organizations like Food Bank, Ducks Unlimited, Caribou Hills Cat and Hoppers, Kenai Peninsula Winter Games, Taste of the Kenai, the Duck Inn, and the Nanichik Rodeo and Fairgrounds have all mentioned and made statements to me for that they now depend on our Highmark Distillery contributions each year to continue their programs or to expand them. Verbal mention of our supporters for House Bill 309, I think, are of interest to mention. Supporters happen to be...
Felicia, can I wrap it up?
Yes.
Felicia, we've got couple more people signed up to testify, but if you want to wrap it up, or you want me to just stop you where you're at?
Okay, I sure will wrap it up. I'll just mention the supporters and I'm done. All right, if you don't mind. Wells Fargo, Small Business Development Center, Alaska General Contractors, CHAR, Alaska Travel and Tourism Council, Kenai Peninsula Travel and Tourism Council, Alaska Bed and Breakfast Association, Soldotna Chamber of Commerce, Kenai Chamber of Commerce, Odom, Southern Wine and Spirits of Alaska, and industries across Alaska are supporting House Bill 309. We all have the Buy Alaska stamp because we've earned it, and we're just asking the Alaska State Legislature to allow us to use that stamp.
Will you take a question?
I sure will.
Representative Moet.
Thank you. So it might be for the sponsor, or it might be for her, but has anybody got in touch with Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, or just to see how they feel about this? It's just a curiosity. I mean, I think that that's something that...
Through the chair, Representative Millett, no, we didn't reach out to any other type of organizations, just people that came to us.
Follow-up? So there's been no pushback at all?
No pushback so far.
Good.
Thank you.
Thanks again, Felicia. Next up, we have Dale Fox from Anchorage, Alaska Char. Are you with us, Dale?
Yes, I am.
Thank you
for joining us. My name is Dale Fox, and I'm here as the president and CEO of Alaska Char. I'd like to speak in favor of HB 309, which impacts the distilleries in our state. Our Government Affairs Committee unanimously supported the intent behind this bill to help the Alaska distilleries and to give them the same rights that we've given to breweries and wineries in the past. I'd also like to compliment the sponsor of the bill and the distilleries for doing a great job on outreach and communicating with all of the parties to make sure that this bill had all of the needed elements in it. It's a good bill and I think worthy of your support. Thank you very much.
Thanks again, Dale. And for the committee's enlightenment, we do have Shirley Cote from the ABC online for questions and Kathleen Strasbaugh from Ledge Legal as well for questions, if anybody has any. And if not, is there anybody else online? Seeing none, we will close out public testimony. And I will lift my objection to the... adopting the CS. Is there any further objection to the CS as amended? Bring the amended bill back to the committee for discussion. Representative Josephson?
Mr. Chairman, this seems like a good bill. We didn't hear any opposition to it. And it's a niche that I think we could enhance with this kind of opportunity, and I just think it's something we should support.
Representative Heron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Tuck, I've read the bill, and I think this question is, just for the record, there is a distillery at the Anchorage Airport that sells its product, but that would not be a place that they could give samples, right?
I don't know that this bill limits anybody where their location is. It's just if they're a licensed distillery in Alaska and choose to do tastings and sell product from their operation, can do so.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Millett?
Mr. Chairman, I like this bill. I had this bill a couple years ago.
Oh. It's back.
It's back.
And may I add, Mr. Chair, sometimes we get confused between distilleries and wineries and breweries, but this is just for spirits. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I could make a joke, but I won't. But what are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move committee substitute House Bill 309, Version Y, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Seeing no opposition, the bill will move out of committee and we'll take a brief at ease to sign it off. We're back on the record. The next item on the calendar is House Bill 152, PRS termination cost. We first heard this bill last year in April and we heard it again on March 10th and March 19th. During those hearings, we adopted CS version Y and took public testimony. Today, it's my intention to finish up with the public testimony and bring the bill back to the committee for discussion and action. With us again to present the bill are the sponsor, Representative Steve Thompson and Jane Pearson from the staff. Welcome back and brief overview.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Steve Thompson from the House District 3 in Fairbanks. And you've heard the bill three times, so I don't want to reiterate a lot of stuff that you've already gone over, but I want to talk about how I'm very passionate about this bill. It means the very viability and existence of a lot of our small communities and villages in this state. With the state's declining revenue, there's problems going on. There's right now in our budget, showing a decline and less money going into revenue sharing. So these small communities are going to have less money. They're going to have to lay off more people. They're going to have to do termination studies, which add to their debt. And you can look at around the state at what they're already paying with the 2008 floor that was put on for what they, even though they have less employees, they have to pay on that 2008 level of payroll. There's just going to be more and more of a problem coming up with more and more debt. You can look at some of the communities in the state like Galena. They have some other problems besides PERS, but they've got payments of well over $20,000 a month coming out of a very small community. And those debts are going to make it so that they are going to have less funds available to keep people employed. I want to make sure we don't lose a lot of these communities because they're going to take out a bankruptcy and just turn off the lights. And that's why this bill is so important. It's going to be the same way to the larger communities, the amount of money that they're paying. And that's just telling you my passion. And to answer technical questions, I have my Chief of Staff, Jane, here.
Welcome back, Jane.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jane Pearson, staff to Representative Steve Thompson. Do you want me to walk you through the bill one more time?
No.
Or? Okay.
I think we've heard it several times.
Good enough.
With that, any questions for the sponsor? We're going to reopen public testimony. Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify that hasn't before? Seeing none, is there anybody online? We've got Sully Stubeck, Fairbanks North Star Borough. Are you with us, Sally?
Yes, I am.
Please state your name and affiliation, and if you can keep it brief, we may be able to move it out in a few minutes.
Okay.
I assume you're supporting the bill.
Yes, I am. My name is Sally Stubeck. I'm the Human Resources Director for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to call in for support of this legislation. We believe that infusing money now into the unfunded PERS and TERS system will save the state and the municipality's future contributions in years where revenues are uncertain but will likely be less. By pre-funding, it allows the system to reduce contributions in future years and allows for interest earnings to be utilized now, increasing the funding ratio for both systems. Additionally, the repeal of the termination study requirement will allow the municipal employers necessary operational flexibility to manage our programs and services. Municipalities should be able to adjust their workforce as needs demand without concern for an administrative decision today having long-lasting financial impacts to the municipality's PERS liability. The Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly did pass a resolution on January 30th of 2014 supporting this proposal, and I'm calling in today again with our support, and Mayor Hopkins has also sent in a letter of support for this legislation. We'd like to thank Representative Thompson for bringing forward the committee substitute. That concludes my testimony. Thank you again for allowing me the opportunity to speak in support of HB 152.
Well, thank you for joining us, Sally. Is there anybody else online? Is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify? Seeing none, we will close out public testimony and we'll bring the bill back for discussion. Any discussion?
This isn't a joke. Actually, there's a 4-2 fiscal note that shows it's going to cost $6 million in 15, 16, 17, $7 million in 18. Can you explain that?
Representative Reinbold through the chair. There is actually a more current fiscal note on that. We have one that came out from the Department of Administration on 3/14/14. It is indeterminate. However, it does state on the last line of the last paragraph on page 2, termination costs would be approximately $75 million.
Okay, yeah, the chair, yeah, I see it's 4/2/13, and now I see it's 3/14/2014. Okay, so $75 million.
Representative Reinbold through the chair, that is correct. That is what we got from the administration. And Representative Reinbold through the chair, that assumes that 20% of the workforce would be laid off in the PERS.
My only question.
Since we're in discussion.
Certainly. Rep. Sam Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, as I indicated, when the bill was originally in version C, I gave it a lot of study and was more intrigued by the graduated formula depending on municipal government size. My concern is a couple things. Number one, there have been supporters of actually increasing local government contributions. So, and I confess, I've seen those articles, but I don't remember who those supporters of the increase are. But the overused word of alignment, I'm not so sure is there. And I think I need to certainly spend more time looking at that. The other concern I have is with what Representative Reinbold noted, that this would appear to grow the unfunded liability. I don't doubt for a second that there's a significant and real problem, particularly in the smaller communities. But I think that's why I thought version C was more compelling. The other concern, I guess, is what happened last year in my hometown, where I was born and raised, it will sort of stick with me for a very long time. And I was here at the time, but I'm concerned about, I understand the need in the public interest to sometimes privatize part of the workforce, but I'm concerned about what happened last year in the municipality of Anchorage. Yesterday there was an election that was sort of a referendum on what happened in the municipality of Anchorage, arguably. And the results of that election aren't clear yet, but I have concerns with unnecessarily privatizing the public sector, because the public sector can be more responsive to public need than I think the private sector, where people are left wondering, who do you go to complain, that sort of thing. So this is a very complicated issue. I don't doubt that its backers have real concerns. I just don't know whether this is the right mechanism. It's a huge change from version C, and so I don't think I'm going to recommend its passage.
I think a good portion of it is to get the issue out before the public. I think with a fiscal note like that, it's going to have a pretty tough time in the next committee, I would guess. But we could ask the sponsor of the bill that.
Could I add one other thing?
Certainly.
I know that Representative Thompson was a city mayor, and so I take that very seriously, and was impressed when I learned that fact with that background. And so I know he has a unique perspective.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, many years ago, the state went to communities, boroughs, villages, and said, we have a retirement plan. We'd like you to join in. This will enhance your hiring ability. It stabilizes your benefit package with retirements, and this will be a tool that you can use that will be very good for you. Most places all joined in. Over the years, it was very good, until all of a sudden the state found out that their actuary had misquoted and that there was a problem. All through that period of time, those communities did exactly what the state asked them to do. The state would come back and say, this is your percentage that you have to pay in for your payroll to make this thing a viable continuing retirement. So they did everything they were supposed to do, and suddenly they get this big bill that says, well, we got a problem and this is your portion of it. And so no fault of theirs, they're caught up in this catch-22. And in order to have the state be able to maintain, because of the size of the debt, they have came back with some things that are detrimental to the future of some of these communities. Hopefully we're going to have a PERS fix, something that's going to come back with through the governor's plans or some way to get this debt paid down so we don't have this albatross hanging over us. But in the meantime, we could lose a lot of small communities through these problems. I mean, it's very scary about where we are, and unless we take care of some of these people, we are going to lose those communities completely. Yes, it has a possible $75 million fiscal note if 20% of the employees are all laid off. I don't think that's going to happen. We're going to have economic growth, hopefully, in this state, and we aren't going to see those layoffs. But there are some communities that I've heard that have got a hold of us and said, you know, we would love to, we don't have the money, so we are not closing departments. We're keeping that thing going, even though we don't have the money to do it, because we can't afford the termination cost and the debt that's going to create by showing that. So this is a very, very big problem that we hope that there's going to be a fix for, but in the meantime, we don't want to lose any more communities.
And this has been an issue for several years, and I believe this is the furthest that the biller's predecessors has gotten. Representative Heron, I believe you have some experience in this as well.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and I concur with our colleague. We just have a choice here, you know, and I can a choice that has both negative connotations. So I agree with my colleague is that let's protect the little people, and hopefully in the fix everybody will get well in the future.
Representative Reinbold.
First of all, I just want to point out that I can definitely know where to go to in the private sector when there's an issue, and they usually deal with it. So I just felt like I needed to get that on the record. When I go to a business and I have an issue, I know exactly who to go to, and usually they're very responsive. But I also wanted to just say thanks for bringing this issue up. It is a tough issue, and I just really wanted to say thank you for taking on a tough issue and bringing it up.
Any further discussion? What is the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move committee substitute 152 version Y from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there any opposition to moving the bill out of committee? Seeing none, the bill does move out of committee, and thank you again for bringing it to us and all the work that you and your staff have done on it. With that, we will take a brief at ease. Okay. We're back on the record. Last item on the calendar today is House Bill 160, Licensing of Athletic Trainers. With us to present a brief overview of the bill is Representative Thompson again and the staff, Brody Anderson. Welcome back. It's just like you were just here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Steve Thompson, House District 3 out of Fairbanks representative. House Bill 160 would amend current statutes to establish licensing and regulations of athletic trainers in the state of Alaska. Athletic trainers are healthcare professionals who collaborate with physicians to ensure the practice of sports medicine for patients and clients. This profession plays a significant role in the management, prevention, recognition, and rehabilitation of injured athletes under the supervision of a licensed physician. Athletic trainers are a vital resource in administering injury prevention and treatment programs, as well as immediate emergency care for the sport and athletic community. Alaska is one of the final two states that doesn't currently license athletic trainers. House Bill 160 will require athletic trainers to have a license to practice in the state of Alaska. The bill will hold athletic trainers accountable to the rigorous standards of the Board of Certification, INC. A national agency created to certify healthcare professionals and assure the protection of the public. As Alaskans become increasingly more active, the need for properly trained and licensed athletic trainers becomes imperative. So I ask for your support in House Bill 160, and my staff, Brody Anderson, is here to answer technical questions. Plus, you have several people in the audience and online.
Brody, you want to walk us through the section call, and then we'll start throwing questions at you.
Great. Thank you, Chairman. For the record, my name is Brody Anderson, staff to Representative Steve Thompson. I'll briefly walk you through the bill. Section 1 is the adds a new paragraph adding athletics trainers to AS0807. Section 2 adds a whole new chapter, Chapter 7 for athletic trainers. The new section, AS0807-0110, talks about the licensing requirements and the exemptions in which there might be a couple exemption classifications. A new section is added, AS0807-0110 020, which are the qualifications for the license, the fee, and the renewal process. A new section is added, AS 0807030, which is the scope of practice for the athletic trainers. AS 0807040 is the regulations in which CCED will be required to create. New section AS 0807040 also adds definitions. And then you have a new section in AS 0965300C1, which inserts athletic trainers to the list of healthcare providers. Finally, the final two sections we have amends AS 4717-290-13, which inserts athletic trainers for the practitioner of healing arts. And then we have a new section in uncodified law, which is the applicability section of the bill. And that's a quick walkthrough of the sections, Chairman.
Any questions on the sectional before we get to the fiscal note, Representative Hearn?
Not so much on the sectional, Mr. Chairman, but just a question to the sponsor, Representative Thompson. What was the catalyst for introducing this legislation?
Actually, it was some athletic trainers in the state that had asked me about if I would be able to help them out to get certification and licensing in the state of Alaska, because 48 states already have licensing required for athletic trainers.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thompson, have there been any, I wouldn't call them high profile, but have there been any recent incidences where we need this legislation because of lack of skills?
I'll turn that over to Brody. I have not personally heard of any. I think that I've heard some, but not enough to talk about.
Through the chair, Representative Herron, we do have in the audience Lynn Young, who is the Secretary Treasurer for the Alaska Athletic Trainer Association, and she might be able to speak more succinctly about problems that they've had. They've, as the association and as individuals, they came to us for the legislation because of the fact that, one, we are one of the few states that don't regulate, and also there's always the chance that you get online, you get your take a couple online classes, and now you're magically an athletic trainer, and what that could potentially do. That was one of the main concerns that was expressed through the possible violations, but I believe Ms. Young would be able to speak more about specific violations.
She'll be coming up shortly, but I'd like to add that this has been a work in progress for several years. And everybody has been involved with it, because it started out with a real tough issue, and the version that's before us right now is by far the cleanest bill that we've had in the several years that we've been working on it. But how about the fiscal note real quick, and then we'll start getting to testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is a fiscal note right now that is dated 3/28/14. It does have FY 2015 having 48,100, and then consecutive years after that in 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20, there'd be an additional $5,000 charge for, and that's basically the setup of the licensure and of the licensing program, and then also commodities and other things like that. In the audience, we also have Sarah Chambers. There is Sarah Chambers who can speak directly about the fiscal note in association with that.
Any questions for the sponsor? Representative Chenault.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No jokes.
Mr. Chairman, whether it's to the sponsor, whether it's to someone else involved, by adding athletic trainer to all of these different sections, are we, and I don't know how they currently do it now, but as far as costs associated with a person's injuries, and I'll just say a person because it may not be an athlete that they're working on, it may be somebody else, will those costs all be able to be passed on now to insurance companies and so on?
Representative, through the chair, that is a question that I don't know if I could answer. I could definitely get back to you if Ms. Young would be able to answer, if not able to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions? And with that, I think we will open it up to public testimony, and we might as well start with Wen Young. Welcome back to Juneau.
Thank you. Much better weather this time. Yes. Well, we can go. Let's go.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Lynn Young. I'm from Eagle River, Alaska. I work in Anchorage. I am the Secretary Treasurer of the Athletic Association of Alaska, AATA, Alaska Athletic Trainers Association. I'm also the Chair for the Governmental Affairs Committee for AATA, in addition to a certified athletic trainer. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of House Bill 160. I feel kind of comfortable in this room after being here a few times. Athletic trainers are highly qualified education, multi-skilled professionals. We are part of the allied healthcare profession. We do work with and collaborate with physicians. We work under the direction of physicians as well. Services provided by athletic trainers are prevention, emergency care, clinical assessment, therapeutic intervention, and rehabilitation of injuries and medical conditions. Individuals who want to become athletic trainers must earn a degree from an accredited athletic training curriculum. Upon completion of the degree, that allows them to sit for the Board of Certification exam. Upon passing that certification exam, which is a national exam, they can call themselves a certified athletic trainer. Once they become a certified athletic trainer, they must adhere to 50 hours every 2 years of continuing education approved by the BOC. In addition, 10 of those hours have to be part of an evidence-based curriculum. In addition to that, they must obtain a current certification in emergency cardiac care. Has to be at a minimal of a professional rescuer level or above that. Alaska is one of two states that currently does not regulate athletic trainers. We are proactive in asking for this, and this answers the question. As to my knowledge, there hasn't been any improper behaviors that I'm aware of in the state of Alaska. However, we don't want to wait and be reactive to something happening. In 2011, athletic trainers also came up and testified on behalf of House Bill 15, which is the current statute on concussions, to which athletic trainers are one of the healthcare professionals that can assist with the prevention, the recognition, and the proper care of concussions. Due to the severity of that, we certainly don't want somebody saying they're an athletic trainer taking the risk of our school-aged children or other individuals and putting them back on the field with something as serious as that. So on behalf of that, we ask that we do have some kind of regulation in order to maintain that, at a minimal, people that are calling themselves athletic trainers have the basis education, the basic education, and qualifications to sustain that. I would be happy to answer any questions that you have, and I'm sure you have many. And I would ask that you would support House Bill 160 and the licensure of athletic trainers.
Representative Moyle.
Thank you. So I'm just curious, you talked about concussions. What, and I'm just talking about kids under the age of 18, what's the sport that has the most concussions?
Nationally, how it's ranked, through the chair, excuse me, nationally how it's ranked, football is the highest, followed by girls soccer, followed by boys soccer, girls basketball, then boys basketball. So the question is, why isn't hockey there? Well, nationally, there's not enough data since not every state has ice hockey. But I would assume, just in my dealings, that ice hockey is probably right there with football.
And follow-up? So are we getting any better with the design of helmets? I know that, like, we bought some helmets for, like, Bartlett and a couple other schools, some concussion-proof helmets. Are those helpful at all, or is it just the sport in general that is always going to be that way, no matter how much safety you get?
Through the chair, that's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up. Unfortunately, marketing is key, and everybody is saying this is a concussion-proof helmet, etc. But the anatomy, to be real brief, of the brain is it sits in fluid. And so there's nothing that we can put on somebody in order to prevent concussions. We can minimize skull fractures or structural problems, but the brain swashes into the skull, and that's what causes. So these concussion-proof helmets help with skull fractures but do not eliminate the risk of concussions.
Thank you.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Ms. Young, can you give some sort of concrete examples about of what an athletic trainer does? For example, I see you work at OPA and in Anchorage, but where would I find an athletic trainer?
Certainly, through the chair. The traditional setting of athletic trainers is certainly on the sidelines of sporting events. In fact, if you watch a sporting event, you see them running off onto the field to take care of the Super Bowl player or the baseball player. The profession is evolving where there are military entities that employ athletic trainers because of the nature and the demands of the soldiers and the combat individuals. There are also some employers employ athletic trainers to minimize the risk of their workers as far as good ergonomic patterns to decrease injuries and, of course, decrease the issue of health care. The basic role that we do is we try to prevent the injuries at first. We educate through showing and discussing. We also are trained to do the care of initial emergency situations. If somebody goes down, we need to act and say, okay, what do I need to do? Is this something I immediately am calling 911? Is this something we can safely move through measures that are in our scope as far as splinting and moving to the sideline for further eval, etc. with that. Following an injury, based on whether they go to the emergency room, they have surgery, or it's something that is relatively minor, we are also trained to do therapeutic exercises and rehab them in order to not only get their injury healed, but also to return them safely to that participation of their activity.
Okay. Thank you.
Follow?
Yes. Why is it that, if you know why California is the outlier and along with Alaska and doesn't have regulation?
Well, I did a little research on that through the chair, excuse me, again. And it is a big state, not as big as Alaska, but they do have a lot of licensure professions coming up front. And so they're trying to weed out and figure out where everybody's role is. But I talked to the chair of their governmental affairs, who's kind of battling with us to be the next state and not the last state. And he says the nature of how big the state is and all the licensure demands, and of course he kind of ingests that, and of course politics.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Ms. Young, welcome to Juneau. Again, can you speak a little bit about the Board of Certification? I'm looking through the backup here to see what the Board of Certification is and its relationship to the athletic trainers certifying boards nationally. I'm not sure if the Board of Certification is something that certifies just athletic trainers or other specialties or allied health practices, or just what it is.
Representative Sadler, through the chair, absolutely. The Board of Certification is our board for the National Athletic Trainers Association. It regulates and certifies athletic trainers. It makes sure that the competencies are met. It discusses the basic educational and clinical components that one would need to show competency and show that they fulfilled it in order to be able to sit for this exam. It goes through the practice standards, the code of professional responsibility, ethics, etc. They also are responsible for continuing education to make sure it's the current approved educational requirements that these individuals are required to maintain, the 50 hours every 2 years. They also have us submit what continuing education we've had, make sure that we have all the criteria, and then they instill our certification for an additional 2 years.
Paula, kind of a related
new question.
New question, I'll be honest. How is, I could draw a line, but I'll just, new question. How is passage of this bill authorizing the licensure of athletic trainers likely to affect the reimbursement rate or income level of people who practice this craft trade profession?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, I don't think it's going to affect much at all as far as insurance requirements or additional fees. The thing that is going to benefit is our youth and the safety of the public. We're certainly not going to be able to demand more money. Currently, nationally, athletic trainers are, as far as the corporation, looking into third-party reimbursement. However, that's many, many years, as with a lot of professions, are doing that. Right now, we are employed by either schools or orthopedic groups or hospitals, and we go out and we try to ensure the safety of the people that we care for. As far as insurances, there's not going to be any more demand. There are some athletic trainers that work in the capacity of what's called a physician extender. in the office, to which if there is any billing for their services, it's similar to a medical assistant where it's billed incident to under the license of the physician.
Thanks.
Representative Rainbow.
Thank you, Chair Olson. Basically, I have two questions, if he lets me indulge in the second one. But my first one is, I had a son that played football, and so I went and I bought a fancy-dancy helmet. I think I spent at least $300 on it that was supposed to be preventing concussion. Well, he got a concussion anyway. So I appreciate your testimony, but I want to know, is there a website that I could have gone and found that out before I spent this $300?
Representative Reinbolt, through the chair, there's not a certain website that will say helmets are bad. On a lot of the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, the National Athletic Trainers website, and some of the medical ones, it does say that good helmets certainly do decrease the risk of skull fractures, and no committee will say one way or the other, but they will say that they do not endorse the statements that helmets will prevent concussions. Unfortunately, the marketing will state that, and basically those concussion-proof helmets are between $300 and $500. And moms, and I'm a mom of four genetic kids myself, and I consider all the athletes I deal with my kids, which is why I say four genetic kids. It's scary, and thankfully, probably somebody acknowledged that your son had a concussion, and there are steps, and we know that once a concussion is sustained, we can safely get them back, but it does take time, and we need those educated people helping. Certainly, you did decrease a worst-case scenario with a concussion and a skull fracture in buying that expensive helmet, but there is nothing that's going to prevent it.
Second question.
Okay. On either side of the chair, you have two representatives from Eagle River on either side of this chair. And we're both wondering if you're going to be here tomorrow, and if so, what part of Eagle River you live in, so we can decide who's going to introduce you.
The good side or the other side?
Well, I live by the Homestead area in Brendelwood. But I see Representative Sadler at the Chinooks, so I'm, you know, both of you are equally important.
Are you going to be in the morning?
Good politics. You're smart.
I could be.
Okay. Any further questions? We're trying to reach the director of the Division of Insurance, but I don't think she's online yet for Representative Chenault's question. But I guess, Ed, thanks again. And I think Sarah Chambers, we do have somebody in the room. Welcome back. And Sarah can answer any licensing questions that we have. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Sarah Chambers. I'm the Director of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. I wanted to take just a moment to meet with you to be on the leading edge of the fiscal note. We wanted to make sure that the division was available to answer any questions and to make sure that all of those who may be interested in bringing new licensing programs to the state are understanding the basic process of how licensing fees are incurred, and that the fiscal note itself is not the gauge to determine the actual cost to the licensee.
Cost of setting up the program?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is the appropriation, the additional appropriation that would be requested by the division, and we are estimating, based on existing licensing programs that have similar characteristics, the lack of a board, similar estimated numbers of licensees, and other variable costs such as investigations and so forth, we're looking at an estimate of approximately $180 for the first year for this board to be set up, and then the first biennium, the first year of setup, which has a higher cost, and then the next year, which would be the more maintained cost, and then the potential licensing fee could be between $100 and $150 for every year after that. So I'm happy to answer any additional questions about the impact on the division or anything regarding these licensing fees that may not be apparent in the fiscal note.
Any questions? Representative Sadler.
Thank you very much. Sarah, just wondering, would there be any economies of scale to be had if, for instance, the department might set up two different boards at the same time? I know you'd have to present your fiscal notes depending on, you know, this board independently of anything else, but might there be ways to share expenses?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, that's a really good question. I do want to ponder that further. However, I will say that AS0801065, which is the statute, again, 0801065, which is the statute that dictates how our division sets licensing fees, does require that each fee that, or each cost that each program incurs is to be borne fully by those licensees. So we do have a fairly rigorous tracking process, or many processes, to track fees that are incurred in the support, direct support of a program. So it's, I'd like to say that initially it would be unlikely that there would be substantial savings, but we certainly would look for those efficiencies wherever they could be found.
Just for a follow-up, because sure. I know there's a couple other licensing board bills of different kinds that are on the rails down to you, so you might put on your sharp pencil and your green eye shade and sharp pencil and see if you can do that.
Yes, sir. Through the chair, Representative Sadler, there is a. I will do that, and we'll certainly get back to the committee with any additional details. If we do see multiple licensing programs join our division, there may be potential cost for hiring employees and setting up those particular employees who could be sharing some of the part-time work that might be incurred by each of those different boards, but I will look into that for you.
Any further questions? Thanks again, Sarah. Is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we do have two people off net. Dr. Carrie Keller, are you with us?
This is Dr. Keller. I'm online. I couldn't hear you.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for joining us today.
Sure. I am Carrie Keller. I'm an orthopedic surgeon in Fairbanks, and I also work in Sitka. I probably have more experience with athletic trainers and their supervision than anyone else in Alaska. For 35 years, I've taken care of collegiate and high school athletes and athletic teams and worked closely with athletic trainers in the course of that work. I'm presently the chair of the Alaska State Activities Association Sports Medicine Advisory Committee. And in the past, I've been on the National Federation of High Schools Sports Medicine Advisory Committee. The National Federation is the NCAA of high school sports. I'm a former trustee and a fellow of the American College of Sports Medicine. I have been the team physician for the University of Alaska Fairbanks and for the schools in the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District for 30 years. So I have some experience with which to say to you that athletic trainers are incredibly important in the school setting, but they're a tremendous help to persons outside of the school setting as well. It's become increasingly clear that our public schools and universities have a responsibility to student athletes to help them prevent injury, to evaluate injuries when they occur, and to care for those injuries, both the acute care and the rehabilitation, as Ms. Young well described. I think this has never been more clear than it has been in the months following the enactment of the Alaska State concussion legislation, for which I certainly compliment all of you. In our efforts throughout the state to follow the law regarding the care of concussions, it's certainly become clear that schools are poorly prepared to take on that responsibility in the absence of athletic trainers in the schools. And as AUSA, the Alaska State Activities Association, and the schools have worked together to come up with great protocols for taking care of protecting our concussed athletes, it's really clear that the schools who can do the best job of that are the schools who have athletic trainers, and that the other schools have difficulty finding substitutes for that, the best substitute being a school nurse. And concussions are just one example, because really the truth of it is that our athletes in our public schools get all kinds of injuries, not just concussions. And the schools are poorly prepared to help the athletes take care of those injuries in all the ways that I've described in the absence of an athletic trainer. So it's not just concussions, it's all the injuries that occur. You know, back in the 80s, I did an interesting study in Alaska. I measured all the athletic injuries that occurred in the course of two seasons in the Fairbanks North Star School District. And then we added athletic trainers to all of the schools in the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. And we did the study again over another two-year period. In the presence of the athletic trainers, we saw the incidence of athletic injury decrease 70% and the associated medical costs decrease 50%. I don't know of any other study that has been done like that anywhere, a before and after. But the statistics certainly emphasize the value of the trainers. I can't serve as a representative in speaking with you today, a representative of AWSAW. They and their executive director need to speak for themselves, but you can see that I work closely with them and I'm very familiar with what they do. And have been a big part of their thinking regarding the medical care of student athletes in our state. And I can tell you that the AWSAW Board of Trustees passed a motion that recommended that all schools in the state have an athletic trainer. And they recommended that the University of Alaska develop a curriculum to train athletic trainers to meet the needs of our state. I think I'll stop there and compliment all of you, and especially Representative Thompson, on bringing House Bill 160 to the committee, and I certainly encourage its passage. Can I help you by answering any questions?
Any questions for the doctor? Thanks again for taking the time to call in and testifying today. And next up, we have Christopher Dean from Fairbanks. Is he still online?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, perfect. Thank you for joining us today, and please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Sure. My name is Christopher Dean. I'm a certified athletic trainer in Fairbanks, Alaska, as well as president of the Alaska Athletic Trainers Association. Good afternoon, Chairman Olson and committee members. I thank you for this opportunity to address the committee today as you consider House Bill 160. I would also like to thank our sponsor, Representative Thompson. In recognition of your valuable time, I will keep my comments brief. Athletic trainers are allied health professionals with a small but storied history in Alaska. We serve the community at all levels, from youth competitive teams through high school, collegiate, and professional athletic teams. As Representative Thompson stated, Alaska and California are the only states in the union that do not provide licensure for athletic trainers. We are here before you to ask that the 49th state become the 49th to pass licensure. Oftentimes, confusion arises in the difference between a personal trainer and a certified athletic trainer. Ms. Young very well described the role, qualifications, and duties of an athletic trainer. I just want to point out that we are not trainers. They are a professional provider of services as well, though we do vary in what we offer. Perhaps the greatest consideration for licensure is public safety. House Bill 15, enacted in 2011, specifically names athletic trainers as a qualified health care provider who may evaluate, manage, and return to play children with concussions. Currently, in Alaska, anyone may call themselves an athletic trainer. The Alaska State Activities Association, the Anchorage School District, and the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District work hard to promote concussion education and awareness, and as a component of that, identify athletic trainers as a qualified health care provider to treat concussed student athletes. A parent, student, or coach should know that the athletic trainer they're entrusting the care of their child to is truly a certified athletic trainer and has the necessary education and competencies to provide quality health care. Earlier, a question was asked whether there was negative events in Alaska regarding athletic trainers. Please allow me to share with you the case of a young man I was involved with. At the high school I work with, we had a 14-year-old young man who suffered a concussion that took 3.5 weeks for him to recover from. He recovered from the concussion, he completed the return to play protocol as defined by OFSA and is the standard in the medical community internationally, and was returned to full participation on a Wednesday. As a freshman, he played on the freshman team, which played Saturday. During this game, he suffered a concussion, had to be helped off the field by two coaches because he was unable to stand on his own, sat on the sideline crying for 30 minutes because his head hurt so bad. At the end of the game, his mother walked down to the field to find out what was going on and why her son was crying and still on the sideline, and one of the coaches told her that he was fine, he was just scared. He said that he had been hit hard, it scared him because of his concussion that he recently sustained. The mother asked if he had a concussion. The coach absolutely said he did not have a concussion. Having recently interacted with an athletic trainer, the mother asked if the coach was an athletic trainer and was qualified to make the evaluation and diagnosis of a concussion, and she was concerned about her son's well-being. The coach told her that not only was he an athletic trainer, he was qualified to make that determination and was absolutely certain that her son did not have a concussion, that he was just scared. So I tell you that, yes, there are of people who represent themselves incorrectly, who are providing bad medicine and putting student-athletes at risk. Additionally, I would like to address a couple of questions that were previously asked of Ms. Young. One of the questions was regarding insurance billing, and that is certainly an area that I want to pursue for all of our athletic trainers, and additionally to open up opportunities for future athletic trainers coming out of either University of Alaska Fairbanks or the University of Alaska Anchorage. We cannot bill currently because we aren't licensed healthcare providers. So that is my number one priority behind licensure, is once we are licensed to go to the insurers and ask them to recognize us, as other states have, to include Washington, which recently changed their Practice Act of athletic trainers, is now sits on the governor's desk, identifying them as health care providers who are able to bill the workers' compensation carriers. Additionally, there was a question asked about increasing employment opportunities in the state of Alaska if we pass this licensure bill. I will tell you that I have spoke with a hospital director of physical therapy in Alaska who has told me the day the licensure bill is signed, she has authorization to hire 5 athletic trainers to work in our hospital and to work within the community. So I tell you, yes, this will help to build infrastructure, to build jobs in Alaska. Thank you for allowing me to testify before you today. If there are any questions, I would be happy to address them now.
Any questions? Quick one. Representative Reinbold.
Thank you, Charleston. Basically, what my question is I understand that this is probably more common than many realize. Because oftentimes the coaches need the players to win or need the next play to win, and they may not have the ability to not only identify, but they might not have the will either to identify the injury. So I do think it's better to have a more objective person able to make these decisions. And I just think it's really important that we discuss this issue, and I just wanted to say thanks for your testimony.
To the chair, thank you, ma'am.
And thanks again. Any further questions? Seeing none, is there anybody else online? And nobody else in the room. With that, I'll close out public testimony and bring the bill back to the committee for discussion. Well, there's no discussion. I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 160 from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Seeing no opposition, the bill moves out of committee and we are adjourned at 5:20.